Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we're going to continue reading from the ELM. I'm going to get through as much of the 400s as I can because there's so much good stuff in here. Guys, I read through the entire 400s, which obviously I have to do so I can take notes that I can present it to you guys. And the stuff at the end on Carrier, I have so much to say about it, on Carrier Awards and prizes and stuff that management can give to us. So if we get to it today, that's great. I don't know. There's a lot of material to cover. I should probably get to it. We're going to pick up where we left off in section 432. And our next topic is 432.6 guaranteed time. 432.61 explanation. Guaranteed time is paid time that is not worked under the guaranteed provisions of collective bargaining agreements for periods when an employee has been released by the supervisor and is clocked out prior to the end of a guaranteed period. For example, most full-time regular employees in the bargaining units are guaranteed 8 hours of work or pay in lieu if they are called in on their non-scheduled day to work. If such an employee works 6 hours and is then told by the supervisor to clock out because of lack of work, the remaining 2 hours of the employee's 8-hour day or 8-hour guarantee is the remaining 2 hours of the employee's 8-hour guarantee is recorded as guaranteed time. You know what? It's not me. It's the writing here. Because in the original document, it says the remaining 2 hours of the employee's 8-hour guaranteed is recorded as guaranteed time. I don't like that wording. It is not possible for an employee to earn guaranteed time as long as he or she is on the clock. So you're guaranteed 8 hours every day you work if you're a full-time regular. If you are a CCA, you're guaranteed either 2 or 4 hours, depending on the size of the office or the area where you work. And if you go home early with management consent, you still get that 8 hours, exactly like the situation is indicated here. This comes up more often for CCAs because everybody knows regular carriers get 8 hours of pay, but management will sometimes try to screw CCAs out of their 4-hour guarantee. It's something that I've railed about on the podcast before. And it was a pretty significant conflict I had with the supervisors at my station, because supervisors should know that they get a 4-hour guarantee, right, for these CCAs. It's not plausible for a supervisor to try to pretend like they never heard of such a thing. And so when they short that CCA, they're like, oh, hey, we don't need you today, you know, or it turns out there's no work, so you can go ahead and go home. If they don't pay you that 4 hours, they're intentionally screwing you. They know they're supposed to pay you, and they're trying to get one over on you. And it's doubly messed up because CCAs are already the most vulnerable among us. They're already the employees who get screwed the most. They have the least rights. They're in the worst position. And then management's going to pile that on top of it and screw them out of pay that they know damn well they're entitled to. Dude, it pisses me off. All right, so anyway, that's guarantee time. 432.62, eligibility. Exhibit 432.62 indicates by rate schedule code and employee classifications those persons other than TEs who are eligible to receive pay for guaranteed time. TEs, which is transitional employees, and I don't think we have any right now, TEs receive guaranteed time according to their union's collective bargaining agreement. If an employee is eligible for more than one time guaranteed, the guarantee for the highest number of hours applies. For example, if an employee is eligible for either 2 or 4 hours of guaranteed pay, the 4-hour guarantee applies. Employees are not eligible for guaranteed time while temporarily assigned to non-bargaining positions. 432.63, pay computation. As a general principle, when employees are told to clock out by management prior to the end of the guaranteed period, the employees are compensated for the hours of the guaranteed period at the rate of pay they would have received had they actually worked the hours. Guys, this is it. This is exactly what I'm talking about. When they tell you to clock out early and go home, especially if you're a CCA, it's right here. You are guaranteed that time. There are, continuing with the what it says here, There are, however, conditions under which employees are not compensated for the remaining hours of the guarantee period. Generally, this occurs when an employee requests to leave the postal premises because of an illness or for personal reasons, or leaves without proper authorization. All right, so here, it does not say if management solicits you to leave, right? Because sometimes management will do that to try to get out of paying this guarantee time. Hey, all you CCAs, we don't have much work today. Is there anybody who wants to go home? And if you say yes, yeah, go home, you still get that four-hour guarantee. All right, and then next, note the five-minute leeway rule. Oh, that goes back to the last episode. Oh, no, yeah, the five-minute leeway rule, just as a reminder, is that if you are a regularly scheduled employee, full-time regular or part-time regular, as long as your clock rings or within 5 minutes of your actual scheduled tour, you get paid for the regular 8 hours or whatever your schedule is. So if you work from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. like I do, if I clock in at 8:05, I can still clock out at 4:30. Or if I clock in at 8, I clock out at 4:35. All of that just counts as 8 hours, as long as you're within a total of 5 minutes. So it says here that the five-minute leeway rule does not apply to any clock rings for an employee entering a guaranteed time status. The employee is credited with the time reflected by his or her clock rings. All right, next. 432.7, time worked. 432.71, control. Supervisors should ensure that employees do not remain on the clock unless they are specifically authorized to do so. Where employees continue to work contrary to instructions from supervisor to clock out, the corrective action must be a procedure other than not compensating the employees for work performed. They can't take away your pay. If you keep working and they're like, hey, I told you to clock out, get out of here. All right, you go clock out now. You're getting paid all the way up till that time that you clocked out. They can issue discipline if they want, but they cannot take away your pay. And here's the citation, 432.71. 432.71, disallowed time. If an employee's clock rings exceed 8.08 hours, right, there's that five-minute leeway again, and the employee was not engaged in work or work-related activities while in the time over eight status, supervisors are allowed to disallow the time on the clock that was not worked. In such a case, the supervisor should prepare a written entry on PS Form 1017A, time disallowance record, as to the factual basis for his or her knowledge that the employee was not working during the period of time disallowed. So if management tries to tell you that, hey, you know, what are you still doing here? You should be clocked out, and I'm going to disallow this time. In the grievance, you're going to ask to see that 1017A, where they try to demonstrate that, yes, you should not be getting paid for that time. All right, continuing on. Examples of time that may be properly disallowed include, but are not limited to, A, wash-up time. Time spent by employees changing clothes and or washing up after their tour ends that exceeds the time allotted for such purposes in applicable collective bargaining agreements. So, for example, there are some people who are going to leave and go out to dinner, or they go to their other job or whatever. They want to get like fully cleaned up and change their clothes. That time is not time spent on the clock, or at least it's not supposed to be. You can wash your hands, but you can't like fully bathe and get all changed and dressed up and stuff. B, waiting time. Time spent by employees while waiting to start work at the beginning of a tour when they have not been instructed or otherwise required to wait. So yeah, if you start at 8 and you show up at 7:30, that's on you. You ain't getting paid until 8. C, personal time. Time spent by employees before their tour begins or after their tour ends attending to personal matters. Again, this is perfectly reasonable. If you're not working, if you're like sitting on your phone, no, you don't get paid for that. And D, meal time. Time spent by employees on the clock during a designated meal period, provided, of course, that the employee was completely relieved of all duties and responsibilities and performed no work during this period. So for those of you who are skipping your lunches, you're screwing yourselves out of pay, right? When you are on that meal time, you are supposed to be completely relieved of all duties. This is why you don't have to take your scanner with you when you go to lunch. I am not working while I'm on my lunch. So you don't have to take the scanner to lunch. You don't have to take the scanner into the bathroom. Next, 432.712, allowed time. Supervisors must credit employees with all time designated as work time under the Fair Labor Standards Act. Examples of time that must be credited as work time if the supervisor knows or has reason to believe the activities are being performed during the time include A, time spent by employees in performing duties that are part of or related to the employee's principal work activity, such as pulling mail from a distribution case, collecting tools or supplies, and adjusting rest bars. So if you're doing these work-related things, you're supposed to be on the clock and getting paid for it. B, time spent continuing to work after a tour ends in order to correct an error, to prepare records, or to finish up a task. So yeah, you're supposed to be off by 4:30, but I still have this work that needs to be finished. So that is allowed time, and it's specifically allotted for here in this provision. C, time spent working during meal periods. All right, this is one you can fight with management over that, hey, I was on my lunch, but then something came up, like a customer came up to me and I had to deal with their mail. They gave me some packages I had to scan and that took me 5 minutes. So that's five more minutes of lunch I should get to take. And then D, time spent distributing work to workstations. Next, 432.72, medical release time. When an employee is released from work and directed by management to an on- or off-site health service unit due to illness or injury, all time spent waiting for and or receiving medical attention on the service day on which the illness or injury occurs and that would have been worked but for the medical attention, including all time that the employee otherwise would have been directed to work that day beyond his or her regularly scheduled tour, is included and credited as work time. So, you're at work, you become overcome with heat, and you need to take rest, you need medical attention, and, you know, that happens during your shift. You get paid for the time spent going to the clinic, waiting for the paramedics, whatever, all that stuff is considered all that stuff is time that you're supposed to be paid. All right. Next, we get into a new section, 434, overtime and premium pay. This is going to tell you how overtime is actually intended to work and what the provisions are. 434.1 overtime, 434.11 general. In emergencies or as the needs of the service require, the postmaster or installation head may require employees to perform work that is in excess of 8 paid hours in a day or 40 paid hours in a week. This would be like if you're not on the overtime list, you could still be required to work overtime. A, the overtime limits in 432.2 may not be exceeded. So this is yet another example of that 12-hour limit. 11 and a half hours of work plus 30 minutes of lunch is not to be exceeded. And there's another citation for it. 434.131, postal overtime. Postal overtime is compensation paid pursuant to Postal Service regulations and in accordance with the applicable provisions of the collective bargaining agreements to eligible personnel at 150% of each employee's basic hourly rate for actual work hours in excess of 8 paid hours in a day, 40 paid hours in a service week, or if a full-time bargaining unit employee on a non-scheduled day. All right, so just some clarification here. You get 5 8-hour days, or, you know, that's like a full-time schedule. So you work 8 hours, anything beyond that 8 hours is overtime. For the 40 hours, anything over 40 hours is overtime. That's 40 hours of straight time. So let's say you work 10 hours a day. So at the end of day four, that's 40 hours, right? But each of those days, you got 8 hours of straight time, 2 hours of overtime. So at the end of 4 days, you have 32 hours of straight time and 8 hours of overtime. On that fifth day, even though you're at 40 hours for the week, only 32 of those hours were straight time. The other eight were overtime. So you don't get paid until you actually hit that 40 hours of straight time. And then anything after that is overtime. 434.133, penalty overtime. Penalty overtime is compensation paid pursuant to Postal Service regulations to eligible personnel at 2 times the employee's basic hourly straight time rate for hours described in applicable labor agreements. So in our labor agreement, that is anything over 10 hours in a day, over 56 hours in a week, or over 8 hours on a non-scheduled day. Next, 434.2, night differential. 434.21, policy. Night differential is a premium that is paid to eligible employees for all work and paid training or travel time performed between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. The following applies. A, night differential is paid in addition to any other premiums earned by the employee. B, in no case can the total night differential hours exceed the total hours for the tour. C, night differential does not apply if time between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. is due only to late clocking out or early clocking in. 434.23, pay computation. Eligible employees receive a premium in addition to their salary for work performed between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. Bargaining unit employees receive a fixed dollar amount specified in the applicable bargaining agreement. Non-bargaining employees receive an amount equal to 8% of their straight time hourly rate. All right, so our premium, if my memory is serving me, is 20% extra for working on Sunday, but I'm not positive about that. It's in the contract. Next, 434.3, or I'm sorry, for working at night, I think it's 20%. Next, 434.3, Sunday premium. 434.31, policy. Sunday premium is paid to eligible bargaining unit employees, as in not CCAs, for all work and paid training or travel time performed during a scheduled tour that includes any part of a Sunday. EAS 23 and below, non-bargaining employees receive Sunday. Who cares about them? EAS, by the way, is supervisors. All right. And note that A, an employee entitled to Sunday premium may also be entitled to other premiums for the same tour, like overtime or a night differential maybe. B, bargaining unit employees may not be credited with Sunday premium in excess of the hours worked per tour, or 8 hours per tour, or of 16 hours per service week. C, Sunday premium does not apply if Sunday time is only due to late clocking out or early clocking in, to a temporary schedule change at the employee's request, or to a temporary schedule initiated by management if the employee receives out-of-schedule premium or non-bargaining rescheduling for the Sunday time. And again, CCAs do not receive Sunday premium. Next, 434.34, pay computation. Eligible employees receive Sunday premium in addition to their basic salary equal to 25% of their hourly straight time rate for each hour of work up to 8 hours. Or in the case of non-bargaining employees, who cares about them? All right, so there you go. It's an extra 25% if you work on Sunday. So for those of you who are in stations where full-time regular carriers are asked, like if you're on the overtime desired list, you can work Sunday just like any other non-scheduled day, but you will get that additional 25%. Note, hours worked in excess of 8 paid hours on a Sunday by bargaining unit employees are paid as overtime pay as provided in ELM 434.13. There's a provision about what's called pyramiding, where you stack different overtime or additional pay rates on top of each other. And Sunday, being a non-scheduled day, it's possible you only get overtime for working on Sunday and not overtime plus Sunday premium. That I am not sure about. It's probably covered in one of these charts that I skip over because I can't really describe a chart to you. But regardless, at a minimum, you're going to get that 25% extra for your full 8 hours on Sunday. Next, 434.4, holiday leave pay. 434.41 policy, 434.411 holiday. Look, this whole thing is just because I want to tell you what our 11 holidays are as listed in the ELM. New Year's Day, Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, President's Day, Memorial Day, Juneteenth, Independence Day, Labor Day, Columbus Day, Veterans Day, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Variations in schedule for holiday observance are as follows. If a holiday falls on an eligible employee's regular scheduled workday, including Saturday or Sunday, the employee observes the holiday on that day. If a holiday falls on an eligible employee's scheduled non-workday, the first scheduled day preceding the holiday is designated as the employee's holiday, except as provided in these other provisions. B. If a holiday falls on a Sunday that is a non-scheduled workday for an eligible employee, Monday is designated as the employee's holiday. However, if Monday is also a non-scheduled workday, then Saturday is designated as the employee's holiday. Okay, so here's essentially how this works. Let's say it's a Friday holiday, like I think, it doesn't matter. Whatever holiday falls on a Friday. So everybody gets that Friday off, and the post office will be closed on Friday. If Friday, see now even I don't understand it, and I just read it. Okay, so if a holiday falls on your scheduled non-work day, all right. So if Friday is your scheduled day off, then you don't gain anything from that holiday being on Friday, right? You don't get an extra day like everybody else does. So you get credited that day on Thursday. So you get Friday as just your normal scheduled day off, and your holiday comes on Thursday so that you get that extra day. That's how that works. Ah, I knew it. It was up in there somewhere. All right, here we go. 434.412 application. On these holidays, eligible employees receive holiday leave pay for the number of hours equal to their regular daily work schedule, not to exceed 8 hours. This holiday pay is instead of other paid leave to which employees might otherwise be entitled on their holiday. Eligible employees who work their holiday at their option may elect to have their annual leave balance credited with up to 8 hours of annual leave in lieu of holiday leave pay. This is a nice option. You know, instead of getting that pay, you get extra time off. And that time off can be worth more sometimes than an extra little bit in your paycheck. So that's up to you, right? That's your choice. If in the previous cited example, the holiday is Friday, your day off is Friday, and so your designated holiday is Thursday. So you have a choice. You can take Thursday off and get 8 hours of pay, and you don't have to work. You can work Thursday and then get 8 hours of holiday pay on top of your 8 hours of work, or you can work Thursday and get 8 hours of annual leave on top of your 8 hours of work. So those are all your options. Eligible employees who work... Oh, yeah. When this option is chosen, the deferred holiday leave pay is subject to all applicable rules for requesting and scheduling annual leave and is combined with annual leave and counted as annual leave for purposes of annual leave carryover. Note, holiday leave pay should not be confused with holiday worked pay, holiday scheduling premium, or Christmas worked pay. That stuff comes up later. 434.421, eligibility for holiday leave pay. To receive holiday leave pay, employees must be in a pay status either the last scheduled hour before or the first scheduled hour after the holiday or designated holiday. So this is especially important if you're a CCA. Let's say you're coming up on Memorial Day, which is on a Monday. You have to have worked either Saturday or you're going to work on Tuesday in order to get paid for that Monday. You have to be working on one of the adjacent days. The good news is that holiday schedules are supposed to maximize our flexible workforce, and so there's a very safe bet that you're going to be working on the designated holiday day, or you're going to be working the day after the holiday because it's an extra busy day. So usually you're going to get paid for holidays. But if you took off or you're just not being scheduled, then no, you're not going to get paid. The other thing to point out here is that it says you have to be in a pay status. So annual leave is a pay status. So if you're on vacation and that holiday happens to fall during the vacation, yes, you're going to get paid for that holiday because, again, your annual leave is a pay status and so is your sick leave. Next, however, for an employee on any form of extended LWOP, leave without pay, paid leave for the last scheduled hour or or paid leave for the last scheduled hour before or the first scheduled hour after the holiday or designated holiday is not approved for the purpose of qualifying the employee for holiday pay. So let's say you're on like a leave of absence. You're taking a whole month off. You're not getting paid for that time. You can't just put in for a vacation day the day before Memorial Day so that you get that 8 hours of holiday pay. They're on to your shenanigans, and that ain't going to work. Next, pay computation for holiday leave pay. Provisions concerning pay computation are as follows. A, eligible employees are paid for the holiday at their basic hourly rate for those hours equal to their regular daily working schedule, not to exceed 8 hours. Eligible employees may elect to receive annual leave in lieu of holiday leave pay. All right, so again, if the holiday is on Friday, you get 8 hours of pay for Friday. Ain't nobody coming to work on Friday, and you get 8 hours of pay. B, holiday leave pay is in lieu of other paid leave to which an employee might otherwise be entitled on the designated holiday. So, for example, you're on vacation, and normally you would take 40 hours of vacation to take a full week off, but one of those days is the holiday, so you only need to take 32 hours of vacation, and you're going to get 8 hours of holiday pay to round that out. C, holiday leave pay is payable in addition to the compensation for hours actually worked on a designated holiday. So essentially what it's saying here is that you're just going to get 8 hours of holiday pay. And that's 8 hours added to your paycheck at your regular rate. If you work that day or not, you're still going to get those 8 hours. D, eligible full-time and part-time regular employees require no specific authorization to be absent for work on a holiday or designated holiday unless scheduled to work. So you don't have to call in and say, hey, I'm not going to be there on Memorial Day. It's assumed you're off. E, a full-time or part-time regular employee who is scheduled to actually work on a holiday or on a designated holiday but does not work is placed in LWOP status, leave without pay, and does not receive holiday leave pay unless the absence is based on an extreme emergency situation and the absence is excused by the employee's supervisor. F, holiday leave paid to an employee who is on a COP status, that's continuation of pay, like if you get hurt on the job, should be recorded as holiday leave and is counted as one of the 45 calendar days of COP, continuation of pay, for OWCP purposes. That's Office of Workers' Compensation Policy. G, when a full-time employee has partially overcome a compensable disability and is working a partial schedule under the rehabilitation program, holiday leave is payable up to the number of hours in the partial schedule. The remainder of holiday leave pay is received from OWCP. So again, you get injured on the job and you can only work 4 hours a day because of your injury. So you get paid 4 hours a day. The other 4 hours of your day is paid by workers' comp. And so on a holiday, you normally work 4 hours a day. So the post office is going to pay you 4 hours for the holiday. And then the other 4 hours will be covered by workers' comp. Now, I don't know jack about workers' comp. It is a huge glaring hole in my knowledge. This is my interpretation of what I just read. But if you are on workers' comp, you really need to get with some experts on that and get great advice. You know what's a really good podcast for that is Fed Up with Ron Speakman. He got injured on the job and he learned all those rules. And he has experts come on from time to time who talk about workers' comp. And he's also had other employees on who've had to deal with that whole injury system. And dude, it is a mess. So if you want to learn about that, I highly recommend Fed Up with Ron Speakman. All right, next. 434.5, holiday worked pay. 434.51, policy. Holiday worked pay is paid to eligible employees for the hours worked on a recognized holiday or for the hours worked on the employee's designated holiday, except Christmas. Christmas work pay is paid to eligible employees for the hours worked on Christmas Day or the day designated as the employee's Christmas holiday. Eligibility. Part-time flexible employees receive Christmas worked pay for up to 8 straight time hours only if they work on December 25th. When I was new to the post office and a PTF, I worked on Christmas Day one time, and it's still maybe the single most satisfying day I ever had at the post office. It was so cool to bring Christmas presents, you know, to people who thought it wasn't going to show up on time. And here comes the post office knocking on the door on Christmas Day, delivering those packages. It was a pretty cool thing. Next, pay computation, 434.53, pay computation. Provisions concerning pay computation are as follows. C, a holiday scheduling premium equal to 50% of the amount paid in 434.53A is paid to eligible employees for time actually worked on a holiday or the employee's designated holiday when the holiday schedule is not posted in accordance with national agreements as follows. All right, so just to clarify what's happening here, what it's referring to is, let's say again, the holiday is Friday, and so you're either going to be off Friday, or if Friday is your day off, you're going to be off Thursday. So Thursday is the holiday schedule where management is going to have essentially two groups of people off that day, because they have all the people who are off Thursday, they're off Thursday. But all the people who are off Friday, they're also off on Thursday. And so management has to staff to accommodate that. And they have what's called the holiday pecking order, where this should be covered in your local agreement. But for us, it's like first people they go through is CCA or PTFs are first, and then CCAs, and then volunteers. Volunteers, I think, from the overtime list, then volunteers from the regular list, or I don't remember, but there's a whole list. And this holiday schedule, they got to solicit volunteers, and it has to be up, you know, well in advance of the holiday so everybody knows when they're going to be working. So this provision says that, like, if you're scheduled and you work that day, that Thursday, you just get 8 hours of pay. It's not overtime or anything. Then you're also getting 8 hours of pay for the holiday. But if the schedule is not posted, if the schedule is not posted as of Tuesday preceding the service week in which the holiday falls, a full-time regular bargaining unit employee who is required to work on his or her holiday or designated holiday, or who volunteers to work on that day, receives holiday scheduling premium for each hour of work not to exceed 8 hours. This premium is in addition to both holiday leave pay and holiday worked pay. So if that schedule is not up by Tuesday, the week before, you're going to be getting some extra money. So it's something to watch out for, right? When you know that holiday's coming up, that schedule better be up by Tuesday. Two, in the event that, subsequent to the Tuesday posting period, an emergency situation attributable to acts of God arises that requires the use of manpower on that holiday in excess of that scheduled in the Tuesday posting, full-time regulars who are required to work or who volunteer to work in this circumstance do not receive holiday scheduling premium. So they got the schedule already, you're good to go, you know who's going to be working, and then there's a blizzard, and a bunch of people can't come in, and so they need to bring extra staff in. You don't get extra pay for that. You don't get a holiday premium. Three, when a full-time regular employee who is scheduled to work on a holiday is unable to or fails to work on the holiday, the supervisor may require another full-time regular employee to work the schedule, and the replacement employee is not eligible for holiday scheduling premium. So here they have to round out the schedule and get enough people in, and so if you call in, somebody else is going to get brought in. It's just as if they had been selected for that holiday schedule. Employees are not eligible for holiday scheduling premium while temporarily assigned to non-bargaining positions. Next, out-of-schedule premium, and this will probably be the last one for this episode. 434.6, out-of-schedule premium. 434.61, policy. 434.611, general. Out-of-schedule premium is paid to eligible full-time bargaining unit employees for time worked outside of and instead of their regularly scheduled workday or work week when employees work on a temporary schedule at the request of management. 434.612, payment of out-of-schedule premium is dependent on timely notice being given by management of the temporary schedule change as follows. If notice of a temporary change is given to an employee by Wednesday of the preceding service week, even if this change is revised later, the employee's time can be limited to the hours of the revised schedule, and out-of-schedule premium is paid for those hours worked outside of and instead of his or her regular schedule. So management tells you, hey, next week, because of some renovations going on at the plant, instead of starting at 8, we're going to start at 10. So now instead of 8 to 4:30, our schedule is 10 to 6:30. Well, that time from 4:30 to 6:30, you get out of schedule premium for that. If a notice of temporary schedule change is not given to the employee by Wednesday of the preceding service week, the employee is entitled to work his or her regular schedule. Therefore, any hours worked in addition to the employee's regular schedule are not worked in, they are not worked instead of his or her regular schedule. The additional hours worked are not considered out of schedule premium. Instead, they are paid overtime. So, same situation. They say, hey, next week the plant is going to be under renovations. So instead of coming in at 8, we're going to come in at 10. So again, those hours between 4:30 and 6:30 p.m., that would be your out of schedule pay. And even from 6 to 6:30, then you're also going to get night differential. Oh, dude. It gets complicated. Good thing I'm not in payroll. So anyway, if they didn't tell you in advance by Tuesday or by Wednesday, rather, of the week before, if they didn't tell you, hey, you have to come in at 10 next week, you know, they tell you on Friday, oh, hey, starting next week, which would be Saturday, you got to start coming in at 10. No, you could just come in at 8. And if they don't like it, they should have told you earlier. It says here, the employee is entitled to work his or her regular schedule. And if there isn't any mail there until 10 o'clock and then you wind up working until 6:30, well, you just got 2 hours of overtime. 434.613, application. Out of schedule premium hours cannot exceed the unworked portion of the employee's regular schedule. If employees work their full regular schedule, then any additional hours worked are not instead of their regular schedule and are not considered as out of schedule premium hours. Any hours worked that result in paid hours in excess of 8 per service day or 40 per service week are to be recorded as overtime. Example. An employee is notified by Wednesday of the preceding service week to report or to work a temporary schedule the following service week from 6 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. instead of his regular schedule from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. So this is the same thing that I was just saying, but in reverse, you come in earlier. The employee is paid 2 hours of out-of-schedule premium for the hours worked from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. and 6 hours of straight time for the hours worked from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. If in this situation the employee continues to work into or beyond the balance of his or her regular schedule, 2:30 to 4:30, then he or she is to be paid for hours worked in accordance with Exhibit 434.614, so like you would be getting overtime. All right, I just scrolled here. Okay, here we go. Employees are not entitled to out-of-schedule premium under the following conditions. A, when detailed to a postmaster position as officer in charge. B, when detailed to a rural carrier position. C, when detailed to an ad hoc position for which the employee applies and is selected when the core responsibilities of the position require work on an irregular schedule. I'll give you an example of that. When I was a Carrier Academy instructor, before I was fired in disgrace twice, my schedule was a little bit different as an academy instructor. So the days that I was working in the academy, even though I had a different schedule, I'm not entitled to out-of-schedule pay because it's an ad hoc position, I applied for it, and it requires work on a different schedule. D, when detailed to either a bargaining unit or non-bargaining position in grade 19 and above, I have no idea how you figure out what grade you are. E, when attending a recognized training session that is planned, prepared for, and a coordinated program or course. So you go to some training that's outside your regular schedule. No, you're not going to get paid out of schedule for that. F, when assigned to light duty according to the provisions of the collective bargaining agreement or as required by the Federal Employee Compensation Act as amended. So on light duty, you know, I guess the mentality is like you're lucky to be fine and work at all. If we only have clerk work that you can do from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m., will you come in and do that? Be happy you get your hours. You ain't getting out of schedule pay. G, when allowed to make up time missed due to tardiness in reporting for duty. So you're supposed to start at 8. You don't show up until 8:30. You're not going to get out of schedule pay for that extra half hour at the end of the day to bring you up to 8 hours. H, when in accord with and permitted by the terms of a bid. I. When a request for a schedule change is made by the employee for personal reasons and is agreed to by the employee's supervisor and shop steward or other collective bargaining representative. This is a form that you fill out. I don't know the form number off the top of my head, but it's like employee's request for schedule change for personal convenience. So, hey, can I come in an hour later on this day because I've got an appointment in the morning, you know, or something like that? No, you don't get out of schedule pay for that. J, when the collective bargaining agreement that covers the employee states that employees detailed to non-bargaining unit positions are not entitled to out-of-schedule premium. And K, when the assignment is made to accommodate a request for intermittent leave or a reduced work schedule for family care or serious health problem of the employee. So if they're doing this to do you a solid, then no, you're not going to get out-of-schedule pay. 434.63, pay provision or pay computation. Provisions concerning out-of-pay computation, no. Provisions concerning pay computation for out-of-schedule pay are as follows. Out-of-schedule premium is paid to eligible personnel in addition to the employee's hourly rate and at 50% of the hourly rate for qualifying hours worked up to 8 in a service day or 40 hours in a service week. So your out-of-schedule pay is essentially overtime pay. All right, the next topic is severance pay, and then we get into creditable service. So I am going to, yeah, we're going to pick that up when we come back. All right, so that'll do for today. We only got to do, there's so much more of this 400s to cover. Next episode, hopefully, I will get to the awards and like cash prizes that supervisors can give to carriers for doing a great job. Because, oh, that pisses me off. Because it is not being done. At least it ain't being done where I work. And it's something that we're going to talk about. In the meantime, keep listening, guys. Thanks for all your feedback. I love getting your emails and you guys reaching out. It's classesofmail@gmail.com. And I will catch you next time.